You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Schedule Release Day! The 2019-2020 Houston Rockets regular season schedule, it is finally here. So to break down what it means here in Houston as the Rockets embark upon yet another championship or bust type season with James Harden in his prime, this year also with Russell Westbrook, well, that's what we're doing tonight here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Monday, August 12th, as stated off the top, it's schedule release day in the NBA, and so that means for this upcoming season, which starts in mid-October, actually late October this year, about a week later than usual, thanks to the upcoming World Cup of Basketball, but by October 22nd and October 24th here in Houston, the 2019-2020 NBA regular season will officially be underway. So in today's show on this Monday, I'm going to look at what I see as the best parts of the Rockets schedule, also what I see as the most challenging, the worst parts of the Rockets schedule. But here in our initial segment, I want to stress what I think, for better or for worse, is the key takeaway of this schedule. And it's that the Houston Rockets clearly matter. This is a franchise, this is a team that is ready for the big stage. 38 national TV games of the 82. 5 on ABC, 11 on ESPN, 10 on TNT, 12 on NBA TV. Look, there are peaks and valleys to the schedule, as there are for most teams. Generally, the biggest factor is timing, back-to-backs. The Rockets have 11 of those this year, which is below the league average, and it's also down from 12 a year ago, so that's pretty nice. But other than timing and the in-conference opponents that you draw three times instead of four, we'll talk about those a little bit more in our second segment. I consider that one of the benefits for the Rockets this year, the four opponents that they only draw three times in the West are the Lakers, the Jazz, the Thunder, and the Kings. None are likely to be really bad. Two of them, the Jazz and the Lakers, could be really good. But before we get into the hard parts of the schedule, the easy parts, the strength of schedule, which, by the way, the first SOS that I saw, strength of schedule, had the Rockets at 16th, which is about the middle of the pack. Generally, it's all about timing, and there's not a huge difference from one team to the next other than the exact composition when you play a certain opponent. And of course, for some teams that have a lot of the same parts coming back, well, you might prefer in that case, because you already have some chemistry, to have your tougher games out front. Whereas if you're working in a lot of new pieces, you may not want to have tough games out front because it's going to take you a while to build chemistry. Other than small things like that, there's not a whole lot from one team to the next that you learn from schedule release day. But what I see that's telling above all else in this 2019-2020 Rockets schedule, which you can view at rockets.com or at pretty much any media provider of choice that you choose to go to, the Houston Rockets, 38 national TV games, nearly half of the schedule. And it's not just the sheer volume of games, it's who and when. When you look at this schedule for the Rockets, it opens up on TNT's first Thursday doubleheader of the season. The past three MVPs of the NBA, Giannis, Harden, and Russell Westbrook, all on the floor at the same time. And by the way, after the Rockets traded for Russell Westbrook, two of the three are in Houston. That's also Russell Westbrook's debut night as far as the regular season in a Rockets uniform and the Rockets uniform at Toyota Center. So if you want to see Russ in his Toyota Center debut, if you want to see the MVP showdown 2017, 2018, and 2019, there are so many storylines to that game. And that just leads off the year for the Rockets. When you go through the key inflection points of the NBA schedule, the Rockets can be found at nearly all of them. Christmas Day at Golden State. We knew the day already that they would play on Christmas, the Rockets and Warriors, but the 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern time slot, folks, on a holiday, that's as good as it gets. That's going to be all sorts of eyeballs on that game. ABC, of course. Then you flash forward to January. I believe the first ABC primetime game of the year, January 18th, a Saturday during the NFL playoffs. That's the one visit of the year that LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and the LA Lakers pay to Toyota Center. I mentioned that off the top, that the Lakers are one opponent that the Rockets only play three times this year. That could be a break. Well, that's ABC primetime. 2 days after that, the MLK Day slate of games, the Rockets host Chris Paul and the Thunder. The second time, actually, the first time they host the Thunder, it's the third game of the year back in late October. I believe Monday the 28th, it's the finale of a three-game homestand, the first in over 10 years the Rockets have had to kick off the year. So many, though, the overarching theme to all of this is that the NBA sees the Rockets as worthy of prime time. And I'm sure some of you are listening and thinking, well, how much does that really mean? Because the Rockets have been a national TV darling the last couple of years. Yes, that's true. But there's been something that at least prior to the last month had been there the last couple of years that didn't appear to be there this year. Now, all of a sudden there is because of the trade for Russell Westbrook. But you look at the last couple of years, 2017, that was after at the end of June, the Rockets swung the deal for Chris Paul. You had two Hall of Famers, CP3 and James Harden, brand new. CP was not seen as anywhere near the end of his prime at that point, just 32 years old. There was a ton of intrigue as to how that season would go. And Harden ultimately won MVP. A lot of folks thought he should have the year before when he finished second to, of all people, Russell Westbrook, who's now with the Rockets. So anyway, the 2017, the Rockets on the national radar, yeah, they exploded that year in terms of the national TV games because of the narrative. But it wasn't going to last forever. Now, it extended into 2018 because what happened the first year of CP3 and Harden in Houston? The Rockets won 65 games, which was by far the most in the NBA, and they were literally a game away, even a hamstring away, from winning the title and dethroning an all-time great Golden State Warriors team. Everybody knows how great that 2017-2018 Houston Rockets squad was, and so because of that, because of their self-professed motto of run it back, sure, they got the benefit of the doubt with schedulers a year ago. Going into this offseason, or at least going into July, I should say, I wasn't so sure that the Rockets would be seen, at least in the regular season, as all that relevant. And that's not to say that they would not have been good. No, they were always going to be good. And quite frankly, with the Warriors suffering the departure of Kevin Durant and the injury to Klay Thompson, just between the Warriors falling off and not being the Warriors anymore, at least not to the same extent, I said on this podcast, the Rockets could have run it back with largely the same starting lineup, the same core as a year ago, as it really seemed evident that they would try to do through the first week of free agency until Russell Westbrook became available after Paul George got his way to LA to join forces with Kawhi Leonard on the Clippers. Anyway, if the Rockets had brought it back, sure, there would have been championship expectations, and logically, you could say, hey, this team could do what the last two versions could not, because the Warriors aren't quite the same team. All of that makes sense on paper, but I'm not really sure what the sexy storylines would have been on the national stage. The Clippers, the Lakers, even the Warriors are kind of intriguing with the changes they've made. The Rockets would have kind of been, and I think even the local fan base here around Houston would have felt the same way, that it's sort of been there, done that. Now, that's not to say that they could not have won a championship, but what I'm saying is that as far as the 82-game regular season, it would have just felt like biding time, that you're just trying to get through it, and then everything will be defined by whatever happens in the playoffs. Now, that's still true largely because you're dealing with a 30-year-old James Harden, or he will be, and a 31-year-old Russell Westbrook. When you have two guys, the two highest-paid players in terms of a star duo in the NBA, right in the middle of their primes, really the last two or three prime years, I would suspect, or the truly elite prime years, there's always pressure to win now, and I think the team would embrace those expectations. But with Westbrook and the change, there's something new. There's an energy to this team, to this season, that would not have been there before, and I think that's fun. At the end of the day, sports for most of us, it's a hobby. It's something we do to pass time. If you're going to put in the hundreds of hours that it takes to follow an NBA team throughout the season, especially if you're a diehard and listens to podcasts like this one, and yeah, I think you do want that level of intrigue. It makes things more fun. And that's what I think this national stage, nearly half the games nationally televised. And so you know the Rockets, for better or for worse, can be talked about in all the local shows, certainly, but also national, global. There is a spotlight on this team. And that's not to say that before the Russell Westbrook trade that there were no expectations or they didn't have a chance to win a title. No, they did, but I think locally and especially nationally, no one would really have thought much of the regular season in either direction. No matter what they did, the storyline would just be pretty much, let's see what happens when they get to April and May. And these playoff series, we'll see what the matchups are, yada, yada. But there would not have been, other than hoping they stay healthy, and that's not much to talk about, really, there would not have been much to sell in regards to the regular season. With Russell Westbrook, and I think the TV appearances reflect this, as well as, again, the who and when these marquee games, like Christmas Day, like the first ABC primetime, like MLK Day, like the opener against the Milwaukee Bucks, the last three MVPs on one court, what this tells you is that folks are intrigued by the Houston Rockets. Now, does it really change the end goal? No. Before the Russell Westbrook trade, they wanted to win a championship. Guess what? Now they still do. So at the end of the day, if you ask Mike D'Antoni and the players in that locker room, most certainly James Harden and Russell Westbrook, they're going to tell you that nothing matters but winning a championship. And that's truly what they believe. As far as fans, though, again, this is a hobby for us. It's supposed to be fun, especially if we're putting hundreds of hours into this. Well, folks, this team is going to be fun. This trade for Russell Westbrook, one way that I got on board, it's interesting. It's a shot in the arm. It makes the regular season that would have otherwise felt like just biding time and with so many rotation players in their 30s, well, you still have Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Eric Gordon, Russell Westbrook, and PJ Tucker in their 30s. Previously, you would have had Chris Paul entering his mid-30s. So other than hoping those guys stay healthy, knock on wood, I don't know that there's much you could have learned with a team that's that mature from the regular season. It would have felt like, okay, let's just fast forward, get to the playoffs, and see what happens. Now, with this new combination of Russell Westbrook and James Harden, it is exciting. It's new. It's fresh. It's fun. At the end of the day, as I see it, that's the biggest takeaway from this schedule release. We knew it before, but now you can see that nationally, the NBA, its TV partners, they feel the same way. As far as how it's ultimately going to turn out, time will tell. But I think for now, we can embrace it and run with it. Because really, I don't think the differences in schedule, for the most part, but from team to team, they're usually not that stark. So to me, that's why I'm burying them to the second and third segments coming up of our usual three-part show. As we finish up segment one, embrace the fact that the Houston Rockets matter. Because this is not a market where it's guaranteed. Houston's a good market. The Rockets are never going to fall off the beaten path the way that, say, the Suns and the Kings, franchises like that, have. They're never going to fade to irrelevance because Houston's a really big market, one of the top five in America globally. They've got a footprint in China because of the Yao Ming factor and a few other initiatives that the organization has done and continues to do. But they're also not the Lakers. They're not the Knicks. They're not a team that, no matter what, is guaranteed to have 30, sometimes even close to 40 national TV games, despite the product on the floor. That spotlight is not always going to be there. So at least for one more year, it's there, and it might be bigger than ever, considering the personalities of James Harden and Russell Westbrook joining forces again, but this time in the prime of their careers, with each having won an MVP in the past couple of years. That's special. That's unique. So as I see it, I know it's not hard-hitting analysis by any stretch, but embrace it. It's a fun day in which the NBA and its media partners, specifically TV, they've made it pretty clear. The Houston Rockets matter. They are going to be on the big stage here in Houston. Again, more often than not, the Rockets, the city of Houston, it's the kind of market and franchise that's going to be on the big stage, but there's no guarantee, especially not to the level that this particular 2019-2020 Houston Rockets squad apparently is after this schedule release. So celebrate it. It's going to be a fun year. As far as what's going to determine its ultimate success or failure, more on that coming up as we break down the best and the worst parts of this upcoming 2019-2020 Houston Rockets schedule. All right, jumping back into the program, this is Locked on Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. On this Monday night, August 12th, we're looking at the recently released schedule by the Rockets, brand new, all 82 games of the 2019-2020 season. We spent segment one just offering general thoughts as far as what it tells us. Nearly half the games, 38 of 82 on national television, which if for no other reason than it's fun, I think that's something that we can all get on board as far as the Russell Westbrook blockbuster trade, sending out CP3, bringing in Russ. At the very least, this is going to be entertaining. And I think that's what overall, when you look at the grand picture, that's probably one of the leading, if not the leading takeaway from this release. As far as drilling down deeper into the schedule, I mentioned some of the highlight games already. Here in segment two, I'm going to focus on what I see as the best parts of the schedule. And then as we wrap up, I'll discuss what I see as the worst parts, the more challenging. Anyway, this is our happy segment. We'll start there. We try to be an optimistic show wherever possible. One thing that I do think works to the Rockets' benefit, they did get a relative break as far as the NBA's formula with what Western Conference teams they only draw three times. The way the NBA schedule works, for the most part, you play the teams in your conference four times, two at home, two on the road, and the teams in the opposing conference, for the Rockets at the Eastern Conference, twice, once at home, once on the road. But if you played everyone by that formula, there's 14 other teams in the West, multiply 14 by 4, that's 56, and then there's 15 teams in the East, multiply that by 2, that's 30, add 56 and 30, that's 86. Well, obviously that's not going to work because it's an 82-game schedule. You've got to lop off four games somewhere, and they're not going to take away any from the East because part of the way the NBA markets its product, especially the season ticket holders, this isn't like the NFL or Major League Baseball where you can go years without seeing another team in the league. Even if you're in an Eastern Conference market that's far away geographically, Miami, Orlando, New York, Boston, if you want to see James Harden and the Houston Rockets, you're going to be able to do that every single year. Well, at least the team. Now, you never know with load management these days. But the point is, you're not going to take away a game from the East because that would mean that the Rockets, or any team for that matter, don't make a trip to a certain market. So there's a formula. It rotates by each year. So it's not so much strength of schedule as it is luck of the draw. But for the Rockets this year, and especially even if there was such a thing as it being strength of schedule based, well, with the player movement these days, the Lakers going from a team that was, I think, 10th in the West last year to all of a sudden being in the conversation for top three, well, I'm not really sure how much it would mean. Anyway, the draw for the Rockets, however it came about, 2019-2020, the four Western Conference teams you only played three times, the Lakers, the Jazz, the Kings, the Thunder. That's a pretty encouraging draw as I see it. Because the Lakers and Jazz, those are going to be two of the best teams in the West. Definitely two of the top five or six, and potentially more than that. So you're only going to play three times against two of the big boys. And as far as the other two, the Thunder and the Kings, certainly the Thunder, if they're healthy, if they keep Chris Paul and Danilo Gallinari and Steven Adams, that can be a playoff contender. The Kings, similarly last year, they were pushing 500 for most of the year, and they have a relatively young roster that in theory should have a lot of organic growth and keep improving. There is no Phoenix. There is no Memphis. It really sucks when you miss a bottom feeder and you don't play them four times because you look at those as expected wins. Of these four, the Lakers, the Jazz, the Kings, the Thunder, none of them are ever easy wins. And two of the four, at least, the Lakers and the Jazz, can be pretty damn difficult. And maybe the Thunder, because you know that when Oklahoma City plays Houston, assuming Chris Paul is healthy, he is always going to give the Rockets his best shot since Houston's the team that traded him. That's just the way this works. That's a pretty good draw as far as the Rockets are concerned, in my opinion. So I see that as the second best part of this schedule. But what I see as the most encouraging part from the standpoint of the Rockets going out and accumulating the best record that they can get, and we know that's going to be an emphasis. They know last year they didn't get the one seed the way they did 2 years ago. And as soon as they lost to the Warriors in round two, that was one of the first things that Mike D'Antoni, that James Harden, the post-game reactions, they cited it. They did not have home court advantage like they did a year ago. And they also had to expend a lot of energy just to get home court in the first round because they got off to such a slow start. 4-7, 11-14 through the first 25 games. So they do want to get higher in the standings. That's a big priority, especially with the Warriors not being the Warriors anymore. The Western Conference is wide open, and other than the addition of Russell Westbrook, the rest of the team, Harden, Gordon, Capella, PJ Tucker, even Daniel House, Austin Rivers, there's a ton of continuity, Gerald Green, make a run for that one seed. And from that standpoint, the most encouraging thing that I see about the schedule is how easy the close is. And that's a big deal. The final 8 games of this schedule for the Rockets in the month of April, from April 2nd through the 15th, not a single time do the Rockets leave the state of Texas. 6 of the 8 are at Toyota Center, and the 2 road games are against the Mavs and the Spurs. So 6 of 8 at home to close the year, the 2 road games being short plane flights for about 30 or 45 minutes to Dallas and San Antonio. Now, they do have a couple of back-to-backs in there of their 11 overall. I think 2 come in the closing month of April. But a big part of why the travel is important in this, what makes a lot of back-to-backs around the NBA so bad, it's not just that you're playing 2 games in 24 hours. It's that you're not getting a full night's rest, and that makes you prone to soft tissue injuries because you're getting in off your plane flight at 3, 4 a.m. You're not getting a full night's sleep, and there are so many carryover effects from that. The way this schedule breaks down to, in this closing stretch, even what few back-to-backs you have, it's not like there's travel in between, and then when you factor in that there's not really any contenders, maybe Golden State, we'll see what they look like. I'm assuming that Klay Thompson's back by April, but even if the Warriors are a contender, that game is in Houston. And the rest, Toronto without Kawhi Leonard, the Spurs twice, who am I forgetting? Oh, the Mavs. And then of the closing 4, 3 of them, Washington, Phoenix, and Memphis. That's 3 of your last 4 games of the year. All are at Toyota Center, and all are against teams that a year ago were 16 games or worse below 500. That's a big advantage. And the reason that I see it as a huge advantage to play these bad teams late in the year is because, and we saw this towards the end of this past season, for the most part, the bad teams check out. If you remember, down the stretch of the year, now the Rockets had to overcome a lot, but they were generally the number 2 or the number 3 seed for the last couple of weeks of the year. But they ended up, even though they won most of their games, being the number 4 seed. How did that happen? Well, the Rockets had a tough finale at Oklahoma City, a playoff team. They lost on that Paul George 3 at the buzzer. Just a tough luck shot. The Thunder, led by now Rocket, Russell Westbrook and Paul George, a very talented team playing at home. A lot of desperation. They were trying to avoid the 8 seed, which would have meant playing Golden State in round 1. And they were playing hard. And that one loss was all it took to drop the Rockets from being the number 2 or the number 3 to the number 4. Why? Because the other teams in the West, they weren't losing either because they got the luck of the draw with the schedule. Denver, Portland, even Utah, which made the Rockets sweat a bit before ultimately, of course, the Rockets held them off and had home court in the 4-5 round, or the 4-5 matchup of the first round. Houston won 4-1 over the Jazz. But these other teams that had nobodies towards the end of the year in terms of non-contenders, towards the end of the NBA calendar, bad teams get really bad. The ones that aren't making the playoffs, it's not just that they're trying to tank. Now, the NBA is trying to mitigate that by making the odds slightly less than they used to be in terms of the draft lottery incentive, your probability from losing and getting a higher shot at a top draft pick. But number one, that's not irrelevant. You do still have better odds if you're the worst team than, say, the team closest to the playoffs that doesn't get in. And secondly, beyond that, it's just human nature. It's like being a kid at the end of the school year. When you know your year is about done and you're about to head off to basically freedom for 3 or 4 months, if you're not playing for the playoffs, not all, but most teams tend to check out. Even the younger ones. I know you think a lot of times these younger teams, they'll want to play well, build for next year. No, they pretty much all know that training camp, everything starts anew. The best example that I can think of, the Sacramento Kings. That was a feel-good story last year. They were close to 500 most of the season, didn't get eliminated officially from the playoffs until the last 10 days of the year. And I thought they'd play out the string, especially with a lot of their young players wanting to build for the next year. No, they didn't. And the reason the Rockets were the number 4 instead of the number 3 seed in the playoffs, the last night of the year, the Blazers sat Damian Lillard. I believe they sat CJ McCollum as well. Yusuf Nurkic was already out with the injury. They were basically tanking that game because a lot of people thought that the Jazz would be an easier opponent than the Thunder in round 1. Now, ultimately, both the Blazers and Rockets did advance, but it looked like the Blazers were tanking that game. The Kings in the first half got off to a 25-point lead, and the Kings blew the 25-point lead. That's a team that had been near 500 all year long playing against a Blazers squad that didn't have Lillard. I'm pretty sure they didn't have McCollum. They certainly didn't have Nurkic. Bad teams, and even mediocre teams, in the case of the Kings, I would even call them bad, but non-playoff teams, they tend to get especially bad at the end of the year because of the checking out factor. So if the Rockets get off to a slow start, or if they need to make up ground in the standings, I like having games like Washington, Phoenix, Memphis. And we saw this to an extent with Houston at the end of the year last year. Remember how laughable that final homestand against the Knicks and the Suns was that final weekend? I believe one, the Rockets were beating the Knicks by like 30 or 40 before halftime. Yeah, those teams had checked out. That's what generally happens. Over the course of a season, teams like that might jump up and bite you from time to time. They're all talented in the NBA. Towards the end of the year, though, the advantage between the playoff teams, the good teams with something to play for, i.e. fully motivated, the gap between that and the bad teams or the ones not making the playoffs, it grows even more. So as far as the Rockets' chances, as far as this schedule, overall, there's peaks and valleys. There's the season-long five-game road trip at the end of March. That's because Toyota Center is hosting the South Regional of the NCAA men's basketball tournament. There's a four-game homestand. I believe that's the season-long one in. I'm scrolling through the schedule now. They have a lot of home games grouped together, but not so much all at one time. Yeah, the four-game homestand in the middle of January, actually. I was thinking it was in December. But you have a lot of peaks and valleys. There's not one stretch that stands out from a strength of schedule perspective as significantly harder or significantly easier. It seems balanced. As I mentioned earlier, overall SOS, middle of the pack. What I like the most in terms of breaking down schedules from one to the other, as I said leading off the show, it's often about timing. And I like the fact that unlike a year ago when the Rockets had that tough finale in Oklahoma City and in a jumbled Western Conference with so many teams close together, that could again be the case next year with there not being a Warriors-type super team. I hated that Oklahoma City finale on the road, and it ultimately ended up biting the Rockets, taking them from the 2 seed and dropping them to the 4. Well, you look at 3 of the last 4, Washington, Phoenix, and Memphis, including Phoenix and Memphis being the last 2 at home in Houston. In my opinion, that's an ideal scenario. You should beat those teams no matter what, but if you play them on a random lethargic Tuesday night in January, that might be the type of setting where one of those teams can jump up and get you unexpectedly. If you play them at the end of the year when they know that they're going to be checking out for summer in a couple of days, it's almost certainly not going to happen. Just ask the Nuggets, the Blazers, the Jazz, all the teams in the Western Conference playoff race from a year ago. So as far as I see it, that's the positive or the biggest one from this new Rockets schedule. There is one, and it's at the other end of the spectrum, the beginning of the schedule, a slight negative, and I'll explain what I mean by that in the third and final segment coming up, in which I explore what I view as the worst parts, or at least the most challenging, of this 2019-2020 Houston Rockets schedule. Okay, final segment here at Locked on Rockets. It's Monday, August 12th. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, and we're breaking down the newly released NBA schedule, some initial thoughts, and then what I see as the best parts of the schedule. Now, in our third and final segment, I'm going to tell you about what I see as the worst parts, or at least the most challenging. And in segment 2, when I talked about the best parts, I mentioned the close of the schedule, how easy it is, and the gap between the good, the haves, and the have-nots, the good and the bad, getting a lot wider towards the end of the schedule. Well, the reverse applies at the beginning of the year. Everyone has hope, and especially if they're playing at home. And that's where the Rockets, we know what happened last year, starting 4-7, 11-14. It got them in a hole that they were unable to really fully dig out of, even though they did get home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs. They didn't have it against the Warriors. And you could argue that the toll that they went through just to get back into the 53-win range that they ultimately finished at had a role in some of the fatigue issues that we saw at times during the playoffs. Anyway, the easy part of the schedule, as I see it, would be the close. The harder part, not necessarily from a strength of schedule perspective, but just the overall totality and the pressure that's going to be on these games, would be the open. Now, the Rockets do begin with a 3-game homestand. That's the good news. The bad, none of those 3 are easy. It starts with the Bucks, who won 60 games last year. That was the most of any team in the NBA. They also have the reigning MVP in Giannis as well. You then have the Pelicans, who despite trading Anthony Davis, had a heck of an offseason. They've got Zion, who won't be in his debut, but it'll be his first week. They've added a lot of talent, Derek Favors, J.J. Redick in the offseason. Of course, they got all the parts from the Lakers that they got for AD. And then they go on a stretch in which six of the next seven are on the road. And none of these, other than maybe Brooklyn and Miami, are playoff levels significantly above 500 teams. And I'm not even sure that those two are. Keep in mind that Kevin Durant's going to miss this upcoming season, at least that part, for the Brooklyn Nets. And other than that, you have some teams, Washington, Memphis, Chicago, I suppose New Orleans, although as I mentioned in that opening three-game homestand, they're going to be tougher than people think. And so will Oklahoma City. The Chris Paul returned to Houston on Monday, October 28th. I hope he gets an ovation because he'll deserve it. But I also hope that the Rockets take the game very, very seriously because Chris Paul will be very motivated, especially in that first return game to Houston. But then after that, 6 of 7 on the road, the one home game against Golden State, that's no gimme. And then even after that, so finally the road stretch, 6 of 7 away from Toyota Center, that eases up by November 13th. Well, guess what? Right after that, you've got a 6-game stretch in which 4 of the 6 are against the Nuggets, the Blazers, and twice against the LA Clippers. The Nuggets and the Blazers were 2nd and 3rd in the West a year ago, and the LA Clippers, at least according to the Las Vegas oddsmakers at the moment, are the Western Conference favorites after adding Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. So that first stretch of 16 games, it's not going to be easy. Now, from a strength of schedule perspective, it might look not all that daunting because you'll look at teams like, you know, the Wizards, the Grizzlies, the Bulls, and even, you know, the playoff teams are just sort of meh in there, other than, of course, the Bucks and the new-look Clippers. But when you factor in the road games, the fact that early in the year, everyone has hope, and then you consider the Rockets are going to be trying to integrate Russell Westbrook, and especially given their status, given the pressure, the Rockets cannot afford to get off to another slow start because there are so many ripple effects. Even though the Rockets largely overcame it last year, now not for the number one overall seed, which certainly hurt them against the Warriors. Keep in mind, the home team won 5 of 6 in that series. But even beyond that, think of how much that James Harden, Eric Gordon, guys like that, had to empty their tanks just to get the Rockets through the 82-game grind and the injuries that inevitably came to guys like Chris Paul and later Clint Capella. It's like you're always swimming uphill or against the current. Sorry, you're not swimming uphill, you're swimming against the current. I try to mix my analogies here, thinking that you're always running uphill. Especially with an aging team, with the Rockets, Harden and Westbrook are going to be in their 30s. PJ Tucker is 34, he's going to be 35. Eric Gordon's in his 30s. This is not a team that you want to feel, for the final 60 games, has to treat every game as do or die. You don't want to put yourself behind the eight ball. There's also the matter that as I'm recording this podcast right now, Monday, August 12th, Mike D'Antoni is a lame duck coach. Now, there's been talk since his extension talks broke down in late May. There's been a couple of reports that those could pick up again. To this point, there's no deal. And if D'Antoni enters the season as a lame duck coach and the Rockets get off to a slow start, even if on some level it's understandable, it's logical, because you know what? The Rockets are integrating Russell Westbrook. It's not going to be smooth. There is a ball-dominant style to both Westbrook and Harden that's going to have to be integrated. There are a lot of road games, that opening three-game homestand, the Bucks, the Pelicans, the Thunder. None of those are gimmies. So you know what? If they start, now I hope this doesn't happen, but you know, if they start 4-6, something like that, then it wouldn't be the craziest thing we've ever heard, especially if there's, say, some ill-timed injuries that happened in training camp or the preseason, something like that. Well, guess what? In a season with this much at stake, and of course you're not moving any of the players given the contracts, or at least the main two, Russell Westbrook on a 4-year, $171 million deal isn't going anywhere. If things go south, there's absolutely an extreme scenario where the Rockets might look at, and definitely nationally, there would be pressure on them to do something about Mike D'Antoni as a lame duck without any financial commitment after the season. We know the Stephen A. Smiths of the world will be pushing for it. And I'm not saying that I'm endorsing it, not at all. But generally speaking, for the most part, interim head coaching scenarios don't end up all that well. The Tyronn Lue and Cavs scenario being sort of the outlier in this case. So if you're the Rockets, you don't want to go down that road. And I'm not suggesting that that's going to happen at all. But it is something that we have to at least be mindful of. If you get off to a slow start and there are those types of expectations, we saw when Carmelo Anthony, his stint came to an abrupt end after just 10 games a year ago. I'm not saying that they would do the same thing to Mike D'Antoni, but at the very least, it could be a distraction that they don't want to deal with. Now, I think that's at the extreme end of the spectrum. Personally, I'm not expecting that, but there is a lot of pressure for them to get off to a better start than they did a year ago. More realistically, what I think the consequences of a slow start would be, I don't think it'd cost Mike D'Antoni his job, because at the end of the day, Daryl Morey, the Rockets' brain trust, they do seem to really like Mike. I think that's been proven this offseason, despite the fact that there's no extension just yet. I think that's just a far-reaching scenario that you can't rule out, but ultimately, I wouldn't see it as all that likely. A more reasonable consequence of a bad start, though, would be something like what happened a year ago, where even if you do overcome it, number one, you probably can't get the number one seed. The odds are at least one of those really talented teams, the Lakers, the Clippers, maybe the Jazz with continuity, plus Mike Conley, make the leap. The odds are somebody's probably going to get towards that 60-win plateau. If you get off to a slow start again, then it's going to be hard to get there just from a math perspective. The Rockets played on a 60-win pace for over three quarters of a season last year when you factor in the first round of the playoffs, and yet all it got them to was 53 wins. In the regular season, it was their final, so they started 11-14. Yeah, it was their final 57 games. So that's nearly three quarters of the way. They played at an above 60-win pace, finishing 42-15, and they still only got to 53 wins. Math can get daunting when you do things like starting 4-7 and 11-14. And then where it gets really difficult, of course, you're going to have some inevitable injuries along the way. And then at that point, the guys who remain, they have to empty their tanks. That superhuman run, James Harden, 32 games, scoring 30-plus points that we saw December, January of last year. Perhaps the best stretch of basketball individually that I have ever seen. But he had to do that, as he said, just to keep the Rockets afloat. And while he was still very good in the playoffs, maybe that's why you didn't see quite as many Harden stretches in the playoffs like we did Kawhi Leonard with the Raptors. And Kawhi, you know, he only played 60 games, and a lot of that had to do with the quad, but he also, because he paced himself in the regular season, he had that extra gear in the playoffs that he could tap into. Whereas Harden, when you start the way the Rockets did a year ago, you don't really, at least you shouldn't. Now, Harden is sort of a Superman in many ways, so hopefully he's the exception to the rule. But it's tough to ask any player, even a James Harden type, or even a LeBron James, just look at some of the last couple of finals runs that LeBron had with the Cavaliers, to dip into that reserve if they're having to give everything it takes just to get through the regular season. That's what made last year really, really challenging for the Rockets. Not just the record missing out on the number one seed, but also everything they had to do just to somehow get to 53-29 and home court advantage in round one. So that's why those first 16 games, you have a stretch after the opening three-game homestand, which 6 of 7 are on the road. Then you've got 4 of 6 against the likes of, well, 2 against the Clippers. You've got Portland. You've got at Denver in there, the Blazers and Nuggets, 2 top 3 teams from a year ago in the West. The Clippers, the at least in Las Vegas, consensus favorites for this coming year in the Western Conference with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. The strength of schedule is not especially daunting. It's not something that you look at and say, wow, that's really difficult. Generally, I think the Rockets' schedule is pretty well balanced. There's not too many stretches where you say, wow, this is going to be just a hellacious run. Maybe towards the end of January, they have a 3-game and 4-night stretch at Denver, at Utah, at Portland. That includes the back-to-back at altitude with the Nuggets and Jazz. Other than some small stretches like that, I don't see anything where you say, wow, this month's going to be easy, this month's going to be hard. But what I will say is just the configuration, all the road games, the Rockets, they need to get off to a faster start than they did a year ago. We all know that, and they need to do that while integrating Russell Westbrook. And I think that's why, hopefully, everyone being healthy, we know they're scheduled to work out together in Los Angeles later this month. Hopefully, everyone's healthy, ready to go for training camp, for the preseason, and so they're not having to learn on the fly in the regular season. Hopefully, some of those chemistry issues are rectified by the time the season starts, because those first 16 games especially, the Rockets can't afford to be below 500 for a long stretch of the year the way they were to begin the 2018-2019 season that saw them end with the number 4 seed. One final thing that I would note, I don't necessarily see it as a bad thing, but just a challenge the Rockets, and this is more organizationally, are going to have to navigate. There's a lot of earlier start times this year, and the reason for that, the nationally televised doubleheaders, ESPN, TNT, it made no sense and I'm glad the NBA finally recognized this, with about three quarters of the viewing audience in the Central and Eastern time zones to have the second half of these doubleheaders starting at 9:45 Houston time and 10:45 p.m. on the East Coast, especially on weeknights. That's just silly. Your audience is going to tune out. So they are moving games to where you see more 6 p.m. or 6:30 Central starts, and conversely, 7 p.m. and 7:30 out on the East Coast. Well, the trick for the Rockets, being a Central time zone team, sure, there are some nights that you're the second game of the doubleheader, but there are also going to be some where you're on the front end because they're trying to sneak in a game in Golden State or at Staples Center involving the Clippers or the Lakers on the back end. And in those, you're going to get the earlier start at 6 or 6:30. The two home games that lead off nationally televised the month of November, Wednesday against the Warriors on the 6th, and then Wednesday against the Clippers on the 13th, those are 6:30 p.m. starts. On Wednesdays, weeknights in Houston, that's dicey. Houston is spread out. There's a ton of traffic. And we saw last year, the 7 p.m. starts. There were some folks wondering if they might move them back to 7:30 or 8 because the gym filled up a bit more for the starts at 8:30. Now, I think some of that is exaggerated because the 8:30 starts tended to be bigger games, the types where the money that goes into the tickets are so much that you'll find a way to be there. Also, a lot of those happened in the playoffs where doubleheaders are mandated and Houston often finds its way on the other side of an Eastern Conference split. So the Rockets, being a West team, inherently are later on. So I think some of it in terms of how filled the arena is at 7 versus 8, 8:30 is a little circumstantial, but some of it definitely is traffic and just regular life considerations. And with some of the 7 games, that's generally the start time, but now you're seeing more of those move to the likes of 6:30 and even 6 on weekdays. That's going to take an effort from the Rockets on a number of levels. Certainly the promotions, you can do the happy hours in which you get people cheaper alcohol, food, whatever it takes to get there early. I think also marketing, just making people more aware that, hey, this game is starting earlier. But that's a big deal. If you're not getting people in the seats until halftime, home court is a big margin in the NBA, especially these spotlight games like the Warriors and the Clippers. So it's a little thing, and certainly this is not the playoffs, but as we saw a year ago, every game counts over 82. The margins matter. It's nowhere near as significant as the other challenges that I laid out earlier, but it's a smaller thing to watch. The Rockets do need to find out a way, and maybe they'll have some success. There are some franchises that actually are pushing start times earlier. I know the Cleveland Indians in baseball have been starting a number of games at 6 p.m. because they're trying to tie into the downtown crowd, having them stay over after work rather than try to go home and come back. So maybe Houston's downtown is growing. Maybe the Rockets can tap into that dynamic some. With that said, that's not the reason for the change. It's not like the Rockets are intentionally moving these start times earlier. It's just a natural byproduct, a consequence of the NBA moving it to where there aren't as many doubleheaders with the second game starting at 9:45 or 10:45 in the Central and Eastern time zones. And of course, those nationally televised games, the commercials run for a little bit longer. Every timeout adds up. And we all know how every Rockets-Warriors game, it felt like it didn't end, and well, that's because it usually didn't until 12:30 or 1 in the morning. That's what the NBA wants to prevent. So if that's not happening in the Central and Eastern time zones where most of their fans are, the unfortunate byproduct of that, there are going to be some earlier start times on weekdays in Houston, and hopefully the Rockets have plans to try and increase fan engagement to get those butts in the seats early. One thing that will help, those games generally tend to be higher profile, so like the Warriors, the Clippers, you're paying enough money for those seats. Generally, when you pay that type of money, you have more of an incentive to make sure that you are there actually on time to see the game. Hopefully that will help, but it is something to at least be mindful of with this new NBA. It's a lesser thing, the start time, and if you're not in Houston, you might not notice it as much, but you will notice it if the stands at Toyota Center are empty, and so hopefully the Rockets are already thinking about that as they begin their preparations for this upcoming 2019-2020 NBA season. Anyway, with that, I think we can wrap up tonight's show here at Locked On Rockets. But if you want more content before our next episode, whenever that may be, then there are, of course, many ways that you can get that content. One way is to follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. You can also follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. Beyond that, we've got a website, lockedonrockets.com, an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, a Facebook account, facebook.com/lockedonrockets, All of those are ways you can access our current content. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, all those types of things. Also, subscribe if you haven't done it already. Please do. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple Podcast, Himalaya, so many places that you can subscribe to this show. That's how you can get it every day or every episode. We're not a true daily show again until the regular season or until training camp. We will get back into daily mode in September, but for now, the dead period of the NBA calendar, of course, we're not a daily, not nearly enough content. But whenever we do get back to where the shows are even more regular, then subscribing is the best way to get them every day, even before I can post them to either my Twitter feed at Ben Dubose or the show's Twitter feed at Locked on Rockets. Anyway, with that, that's where I will leave you guys on this Monday, August 12th. As always, I appreciate you guys for tuning in, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked on Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.